This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We're so glad to be with you for this special WBAI Fund Drive. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Today on Taking Aim, we're going to revisit the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital, our four-part, highly edited. I mean, this is just a rollicking, fast-paced, four-part series. The first part deals with the immediate collapse of Bear Stearns. The second part, the specter of systemic collapse. The third part, regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making. And part four, the depth of the assault on working people. Today we'll play excerpts from part three and part four, and we'll be discussing the significant, the historic events taking place in Congress. As you know, the Congress just passed amazing legislation. I say it's amazing because Congress is giving away its own authority. It is giving over to the executive, in the name of the Treasury Secretary, unilateral authority to allocate taxpayer funds to rescue Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, private corporations. Implicitly, people believe that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have the backing of the federal government, but they don't. They are private corporations. The bill had to raise the federal government debt ceiling by $800 billion to $10.6 trillion. It increased the cushion between the debt limit and the current federal debt to $1.1 trillion. It's a massive rescue. If you considered the collapse of Bear Stearns and the rescue by the U.S. government to be significant, historic, as the Wall Street Journal did, and all the other financial pundits across the world, this one even steps further. Ralph, quickly, so we can get to the excerpt.
Well, Maya, I think people have to take note of the fact that this is not just a cyclical crisis. This is a crisis now that is the culmination of a system in terminal decay. And every major outspoken voice of the financial establishment, the major vehicles, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Business Wire, Business Week, Wall Street Journal, as I mentioned, are confirming this. The San Francisco Chronicle. Concern grows over a fiscal crisis for the United States. People seem to think the government has money, said former U.S. Controller General David Walker. The government does not have any money. A rare consensus has developed across the political spectrum. The government's fiscal affairs are precarious, with an astonishing $53 trillion in liabilities, according to the Government Accountability Office. And just on this very point, Maya, the world economy, according to the Bank for International Settlements annual report, has reached what they call the tipping point. That's a euphemism for collapse, brothers and sisters.
And right now, this is a moment, an incredible moment to support WBAI and to support Taking Aim. 212-209-2950. Where else would you get such cogent analysis? Where else would you get an understanding of what is taking place with capitalism today and what you can do about it, how you can improve your lives? So please call 212-209-2950. If you haven't already contributed for this premium, do so now. If you have contributed, call your friends. Tell them this is the moment. It will be in their homes right away. 212-209-2950, the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital. Michael, let's go to part three, regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, Part 3, Regulatory Charade, A New Crisis in the Making. David Wessel, writing in the Wall Street Journal, called it 10 days that changed capitalism. An attribute to the wonderful book, 10 Days That Shook the World by John Reed. John Reed, of course, was referring to the Bolshevik Revolution. Wessel is referring to the actions by the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury Department to bolster Wall Street and the financial markets. He writes, "The past 10 days will be remembered as the time the U.S. government discarded a half century of rules to save American financial capitalism from collapse. On the Richter scale of government activism, the government's recent actions don't yet register at Franklin Delano Roosevelt levels. They are shrouded in technicalities and buried in a pile of new acronyms. But something big just happened. It happened without an explicit vote by Congress. And though Treasury hasn't cut any checks for housing or Wall Street rescues, billions of dollars of taxpayer money were put at risk." So writes the Wall Street Journal. First, over the St. Patrick's Day weekend, the Fed, referring to the Federal Reserve, forced the sale of Bear Stearns, the fifth largest U.S. investment bank. It forced the sale to J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, we say forced the sale. We should say negotiated the sale. J.P. Morgan Chase is getting a bonanza with the acquisition of the fifth largest U.S. investment bank. The Fed wanted the price to be so low at $2 a share, $239 billion of securities, that there was a shareholder rebellion, the shareholders being the employees of Bear Stearns, that prompted J.P. Morgan to raise the price. It raised the price to $10 a share. The Fed still agreed to take on the losses, and that is the $29 billion of securities in Bear Stearns' portfolio that essentially had no value on the open market. The Fed didn't stop there. It lent directly to Wall Street securities firms for the first time, invoking a special part of the Depression-era legislation. It lent to investment banks and other Wall Street firms that don't have rules and regulations monitored by the Federal Reserve. In the first 3 days of this new era, writes Wessel, securities firms borrowed an average of $31.3 billion a day from the Fed. That's not small change, he remarks, and it's why Mr. Paulson, referring to the Treasury Secretary, is endorsing changes to give the Fed more access to these firms' books. What is this access to which David Wessel is referring? It's a blueprint that the Treasury Secretary revealed, a blueprint of his proposals to further deregulate the financial markets. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the subtitle of this article, 10 Days That Changed Capitalism, as you so rightly say, it evokes the extraordinary, breathtaking, moment-to-moment evocation of the Bolshevik Revolution, the rising of the Russian masses that transformed both Tsarist Russia and, in fact, changed the world. And it's by no means an accident that the Wall Street Journal invokes the revolutionary journalism of John Reed in its title, 10 Days That Changed Capitalism. And what is the subtitle? Officials improvise to rescue markets. Will it be enough? And that's the critical issue here, because they are virtually admitting that they are stabbing in the dark and that the actual agenda is the precise opposite of what it purports to be. There is no regulatory effort here to contain, control, and tame the rampant bubble-like fictive capital on which capitalism has depended virtually since the Roosevelt era. The pump priming of John Maynard Keynes during the so-called New Deal was nothing more than an addiction to arms production, waste production, and deficit financing for capital, as actual productive forces were phased out, real manufacturing base eradicated, as capitalism found itself unable to sustain the profits that it likes, the profits that it needs, the imperial conquest on which it depends, based on manufacture and the actual production of real value in the economy.
Ralph, a further step that the government took was, instead of tightening the market, instead of saying, okay, Wall Street, okay, banks, you got caught because you didn't have enough capital, enough assets on hand to cover when there were failures of some of your securities, the securities that were based on subprime mortgages and other mortgages and other derivative securities. Instead, what the government has done is allow institutions such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that consolidate mortgages and create some of these securities which the large institutions are trading. Instead, it allows them to raise capital by lowering the amount of assets that they have to keep on hand. In other words, it allows them to increase their leverage so they can buy about $200 billion more in these mortgage-backed securities, these mortgage-backed securities that are becoming worthless as there are more and more foreclosures. There are right now 1 million foreclosed homes, and it's expected that there might be another 1 million foreclosed homes as more of these adjustable-rate mortgages leave their fixed rate and go on the market. Ralph?
Well, that's the whole point, because capitalism is an anarchic quest for endless profits, no matter the consequences, deepening exploitation, ravaging the social and economic infrastructure of the society. And the government regulator allows them, says this Wall Street article, to increase their leverage so they can buy, as you mentioned, $200 billion more in mortgage-backed securities. But as the Wall Street Journal states, everybody knows that when Fannie and Freddie stumble, the taxpayers will get stuck with the tab. That means that the next crisis will be bailed out on an even greater scale, except that as the crisis deepens, there ain't going to be nothing with which to bail out. The federal regulator, the low-profile federal home loan banks, are even less well-capitalized than Fannie and Freddie. And yet they are going to be allowed to buy twice as many Fannie and Freddie blessed mortgages as previously permitted, another $100 billion worth. And what does the Wall Street Journal admit? It's messy, uncomfortable, undoubtedly flawed, like firefighters rushing to a five-alarm fire. The policies makers are making mistakes that will be apparent only in retrospect. But regardless, the clear and present danger that this virus in housing, mortgage, and credit markets is infecting the overall economy is too great to ignore. The Great Depression was worsened because the initial government reaction was wrong-headed, and they spent, referring here to Ben Bernanke, the Fed chairman, he spent an academic career trying to learn how to avoid repeating those mistakes. What does that mean in reality? There's an enormous gap between these rates of mortgages and the sickly housing market, an enormous gap between the actual capital base for all this speculation and the real value that can be ascribed to this fictive capital. Because what are they doing to get themselves out of this crisis? They're deepening, as you indicated, the leveraging of paper shuffling, the leveraging of paper products on which they speculate and in which they attempt to produce more value, which is not there. Again, the gap remains enormous by historical standards, and its money markets are under stress. The banks and others hoard cash, and the super safe short-term treasuries among them. Is it enough? Is it enough? Quote, probably not. The downward tug on the overall economy persists. The next step is almost sure to require the explicit use of taxpayer money. This is an admission. that what they are doing now under the name of regulation is letting the thing run amok. Quote, in ordinary times, a capitalist economy lets prices like homes, mortgage-backed securities, and stocks fall to the point where the big bucks crowd rushes in hoping to make a killing. But if big buck money remains on the sidelines, unpersuaded that the bottom is near, the wait for bargain hunters to take the plunge will be long and very painful. So the next step, no matter how it is dressed up, is to involve the government moving in ways to put a floor on the prices, hoping to limit the downside risk so more are willing to buy and deeper pocket investors are willing to lend them the money to do so. What is the criterion here? Scavenging. Looking for how you get in and use the crisis to deepen your profits, to scoop up things at a dollar for a $100 value, at 1/100th of the prior value. This is not a formula for stabilization. This is creating an even greater bubble than that which created the crisis of the moment. And the Wall Street Journal, when you read it carefully, is admitting that the 10 days that changed capitalism are by no means a 10 days invoked by chance. They are invoking the 10 days that shook the world because the change of capitalism is one of deepening crisis preparing for the revolutionary upsurge to follow.
What the capitalist economy did, in other words, its political structure, the government, in this case the U.S. government, did is what the bourgeois governments have always been doing. They prop up the financial markets. In this case, they provided the backing to keep the financial markets running what they hope smoothly and to show a confidence so that the private markets would inject capital into these failing banks and other financial institutions. The same way as Friedrich Engels wrote, in the development of capitalism, it was the governments that provided the infrastructure, roads, railroads, and all the basic infrastructure of the economy. The capitalists could then focus on the development of their industries.
Energy, transport, all, as you say, of the infrastructure is supplied by the state, milking the public. And it's designed to sustain and underwrite the oligarchy, the ruling class. David Stock, he coined the phrase the corporate soup line, candidly acknowledging that what the Communist Manifesto lays out is very clear, that the state is but the vehicle for sustaining the capitalist ruling class, and it is just the state is run by the executive committee of the capitalist class to subsidize itself and to sustain its dictatorship. It's the dictatorship of capital that pays for and controls the political process and that owns the state, which is but a facade for sustaining its rule and providing the coercive instrument for maintenance of that rule, police, army, intelligence services, and the apparatus of repression. But Maya, let's look for a moment, because the Wall Street Journal has to dance around this reality, even though to give credit where credit is due, the financial journals of capital, from the Financial Times to the Wall Street Journal to Business Week to U.S. News and World Report to Bloomberg News, are writing it accurately. They are describing a reality they usually disguise. They may use euphemisms, but you cannot mistake the reality that is coming through their pages. And in the New York Times article of March 30th, in Treasury Plan, A Reluctant Eye Over Wall Street, Nelson Schwartz and Floyd Norris spell it out even more clearly.
Ralph, we should mention that the plan they're talking about is the plan that was announced by Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson Jr. on Monday. This is his blueprint for financial regulatory reform. This blueprint, the executive summary, is available on the internet, and it is the response of Paulson, who at one time was the chair of Goldman Sachs, in the same way that former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin also was a head of Goldman Sachs, the largest Wall Street investment stock brokerage firm. And today we have Paulson coming out with a blueprint that, instead of regulating markets, responds to the request of commercial banks such as Citigroup to deregulate the financial markets. And the biggest part is the Federal Reserve doing what it just did, being the avenue of last resort for the financial markets, and in a crisis, bolstering up the capitalist economy.
What is so absurd about this is that the regulatory agency, whether it's the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is manned by the very captains of capital, they all come from Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Citigroup. These are the bankers and the stockbrokers, the captains of capital, who are then regulating themselves. And the article states the Bush administration is proposing the broadest overhaul of Wall Street regulation since the Great Depression. But the plan to be unveiled on Monday, writes Nelson Schwartz and Floyd Norris, has its genesis in the year-long effort to limit Washington's role in the market. That DNA is unmistakably evident in the fine print, they admit. The proposal would impose the first regulation of hedge funds and private equities funds, but that oversight will have a light touch, enabling the government to do little beyond collecting information. The regulatory umbrella created in the 1930s would grow wider with power concentrated in fewer agencies, but their authority will be limited, doing virtually nothing to regulate the many new financial products whose unwise use has been the culprit in the current financial crisis. You can't have it more clearly stated than that. This is a charade. This is the antithesis of regulation. This is the concentration of decision-making in even fewer hands, but the same hands that created the financial crisis to begin with. The plan hands vast new authority to the Federal Reserve, essentially formalizing what had been an improvised process over the last 3 weeks. But some fear that the central bank's role in creating the mess undercuts its ability to clean it up. All the checks and balances in this plan reflect the mindset of its architect, Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson, Jr., who comes to Washington after a long career on Wall Street. He is worried that any effort to substantially tighten regulation hampers the ability of American markets to compete with foreign rivals. As to the full effect of the credit crisis, as it becomes clearer, these political stakes are growing, and Paulson is clearly taking a stand against critics who call for stricter regulation, rejecting any notion that the crisis in financial markets and the collapse of Bear Stearns can be laid at the administration's doorstep. In a draft of his speech, he declares, "It is not fair or accurate to blame our regulatory structure for the current turmoil." And he further argues, the New York Times makes clear, the current regulatory structure is outdated, echoing the traditional Republican view that new rules and agencies are no substitute for the market disciplining itself. So what do we have here? The proposal creates a set of federal regulators with nominal authority over the players in the financial system, banks, insurance companies, and the entities such as hedge funds and private equity funds, but that authority is critically limited. The Fed, which Paulson proposes to make the market stability regulator, would be given explicit authority to limit the risks financial institutions take regarding certain asset classes and to address liquidity and funding issues, but only in an advisory capacity and after the fact. In short, these are the very problems that cause the nation's banks and brokerage firms tens of billions of dollars, so it's going to be the same old, what the article in the New York Times calls an alphabet soup of unregulated products cooked up by financial engineers, such as the collateralized debt obligations, the CDOs, and the CDS credit default swaps, the same phenomenon that's created the crisis over which this nominal regulatory response is being made, a regulatory response that it's the exact opposite of what it purports to be.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. And for this special fund drive, we're asking you to call 212-209-2950. You've been listening to an excerpt of Part 3 of The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. How prescient we were. How important is understanding what is happening today and how well I have to say we did it. And especially with this highly edited version, this is incredible. You've got to have it. It's four parts in your home, in your library, 212-209-2950. This is also another wonderful moment to contribute to WBAI, to see WBAI through the spring and early fall. Keep radio coming to you. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Karl Marx, in the third volume of Capital, laid out very clearly what he called the dynamics of fictive capital. This category of fictive capital describes a process in which manufacturing and profit derived from the surplus value of people's labor no longer provides the margins that capital needs to sustain itself. That is the inexorable process, because as workers organize, as workers became capable of organizing trade unions, of finding a political expression, of challenging capital, the process through which the extraction of profit could be escalated began to recede, and capital turned to speculation based on paper, extrapolating from paper values that had relatively little capital base, and this system falling upon itself over and over and over pump out instruments of value that, in fact, were based on nothing.
Well, Ralph, there's a good example of that. General Motors with the production of cars. It was producing cars, but if people didn't have money to buy the cars, it couldn't produce more and make more profits. So they set up GMAC, that is the financing arm of General Motors, and they were lending people cars. They were becoming the very bank. You put down 1%, and then you keep making payments on these cars, and then they would encourage you to turn over your car every 3 years. Before long, GMAC became a larger arm of General Motors than General Motors itself. Well, if people don't have their jobs, they can't pay the payments for their cars, and they don't buy as many cars, and you find then the drawing back of General Motors with the production of cars, and then consequently the collapse of GMAC, too.
Well, actually, in 1911, Karl Kautsky expanded upon this, and then Rudolf Hilferding, in his book Finance Capital, which is an extraordinary work, took Marx's insights in the third volume even further. Much of what passes for analysis of systemic collapse in capitalism, in fact, is mimicking and reiterating what was laid out so clearly and prophetically by Marx and Kautsky and Hilferding. Well, here, brothers and sisters, is the August Review, which is an analysis instrument of capital, July 21st, 2008, the imminent financial crisis. Europeans not assuaged. You won't see this repeated in U.S. media outlets. Europe is running scared of an impending financial crisis and disaster. I'm quoting, Barclays Capital, the Royal Bank of Scotland, and Fortis are pulling away from the U.S. financial market. The withdrawal of funds from New York institutions is not being reported, but it amounts to a run on the banks involved, similar to what happened in Bear Stearns in March, and the run is expanding. These major financial institutions in Europe are predicting imminent, major economic and market meltdowns. I'm still quoting. Fortis expects a complete collapse of the U.S. financial markets within a few days to weeks, which explains, according to Fortis, the series of interventions last Thursday to retrieve $8 billion, tip of the iceberg. Now, this is CNBC News, quote, complete meltdown, unquote. We may have been saved just in time, but the situation in the United States is far worse than we thought, said Fortis chairman Maurice Lippens. Fortis expects bankruptcies among 6,000 additional American banks, and Citigroup, General Motors, will start a complete meltdown in the United States. Fortis has made cash calls in the face of a United States meltdown, this is CNBC News, and again, the Royal Bank of Scotland headline warnings of a global crash. Quote, the Royal Bank of Scotland has advised clients to brace for a full-fledged crash in global stock and credit markets over the next 3 months as inflation paralyzes the major central banks. A very nasty period is upon us. Be prepared, said Bob Janjua, the bank's credit strategist. Brothers and sisters, what we are experiencing and what we are witnessing here is the culmination of a growing and building systemic crisis in capital. And what this series does, this four-part Bear Stearns series, is it concretizes. It makes specific and clear and illuminating this ongoing crisis of capital. Leon Trotsky once said that this system is not merely ripe for revolution, but rotten ripe. This system cannot meet the elementary needs of humankind. It is deepening the crisis of humanity. It is subjecting humanity to the barbarism of permanent war, genocidal devastation, mass starvation, the destruction of all that civilization has produced. This is not any more dramatic than the workings of capital demonstrate it to be on a daily basis. This series arms you with information, provides the analysis, and gives us a strategic insight into what needs to be done, brothers and sisters.
And again, call 212-209-2950. We're talking about tough times, and that is a time that WBAI will mean the most to you. Please, I don't hear the phones ringing. Get on the phone. Be the first. 212-209-2950. Ralph and I wouldn't be coming to you with Taking Aim week after week, whether you're listening on the radio or on the radio stream or through our program archive somewhere in the world. Please, 212-209-2950. Keep WBAI going. As we're talking about the deepening assault right here in California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger threatened to sign an executive order because there hasn't been agreement on the budget, and that executive order would slash the salaries of nearly three-quarters of the state's 275,000 employees. And slashing them from a California legislatively approved minimum wage of $8 an hour down to the federal minimum wage of $6.55 an hour. And mind you, an $8 an hour is not sufficient to survive in California. You have to be making more than at least $10 an hour to be at even a poverty level in California. And he is threatening to slash it to $6.55. The 200,000 affected workers include a cross-section of professionals and workers from university faculty to people who work for the state retirement fund, healthcare workers, clerical staff. The governor says it's going to save $1.2 billion a month off the hides of the workers, not off his hide, not off the billionaire Arnold Schwarzenegger. 212-209-2950. This is the way the rulers, this is the attempt of the rulers to strike at working people. Ever-deepening assault on working people. And that is why it's important to organize. That is why it's important to have our media institutions such as WBAI. 212-209-2950. The collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital is a four-part, dense, and I'll say it again, very dense with information, series for you, $100 contribution. Think about that. It's less than $25 each, and it is something you're going to listen to over and again. You're going to share with your friends, your family, your colleagues. You must have it, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I wouldn't call it dense. I'd call it packed with information, but information that elucidates our understanding. Because, brothers and sisters, although it's fact-intensive, it's very clearly analyzed. It provides an understanding. It makes these categories that are often difficult to grasp very clear to us indeed.
By dense, Ralph, I mean it in a positive way.
Well, I know you do, Maya, but I just want to make clear to people.
Rich with information.
I want to make clear to people that the information is there, but it is informed by understanding so that we're prepared to act on what we begin to perceive. I started by mentioning just a few moments ago, brothers and sisters, the assessment of the Royal Bank of Scotland, as cited on July 21st, advising clients to brace for what it calls, again I'm quoting, a full-fledged full-fledged crash in global stock and credit markets over the next 3 months as inflation paralyzes the major central banks. The report by the bank's research team warned, quote, the S&P 500 index of Wall Street equities will fall by more than 300 points to 1,050 by September as all the chickens come home to roost from the global boom with contagion spreading across Europe and emerging markets. And the quote continues, the Fed is in panic mode. The massive credibility chasms down which the Fed and even the ECB will plummet, the European Community Bank, when they fail to hike rates in the face of higher inflation, will combine to give a big sell-off in risky assets. The Daily Telegraph expatiates upon this. Barclays Capital is advising clients, batten down the hatches for a worldwide financial storm. The U.S. Federal Reserve has allowed the inflation genie out of the bottle. Its credibility has fallen below zero. Barclays warns of a financial storm of unprecedented magnitude. Brothers and sisters, this is not us talking. This is us citing the captains of capital, acknowledging within their own circles that the chickens indeed, as they themselves say, quoting Malcolm X without being aware of it, the chickens have come home to roost, brothers and sisters. Capitalism is in terminal decay.
212-209-2950. I didn't announce at the beginning of the hour we're on just from 5 to 6. This is your only opportunity. Please call in. There's also another way you can contribute. WBAI has a pick your favorite programs section now on the Fund Drive portion of the website. So if you can go up and you can make a specific donation to WBAI and say how Taking AIM is your favorite program, or one of your favorite program for today, 212-209-2950. Please keep us on the air. Keeping us on the air means keeping WBAI on the air, coming to you 24/7. These are the times when you must contribute to WBAI. We must keep this station going. It's our outlet. It's our radical outlet on the world. And we need it. We need you. Station needs you, and the reason is because this is your station. It's only listener-sponsored. 212-209-2950, the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital is our gift to you, for your contribution, our thank you gift for your contribution of $100. There are other ways to contribute to WBAI, so please think of those too. 212-209-2950. One quick word from Ralph, and I wanted to play another excerpt for you. And while we're playing the other excerpt, keep the phones ringing because, we're going to be off the air to make way for the WBAI news. So you must call while the next excerpt is playing. Ralph, one quick word.
Yes, New York Times, July 28th, headline, worried banks sharply reduce business loans. Banks struggling to recover from multi-billion dollar losses are curtailing loans to American business, depriving even healthy companies of money for hiring and expansion. Then the New York Times states, the turmoil will persist deep into next year. Next, Bernanke's hush money, the $4 billion that the FDIC is paying to a handful of depositors in IndyMac is hush money. Don't spread the rumors about insolvent banks. Why? Because in a fractionally reserved system, all the banks are technically insolvent. This is an abiding crisis. That's why Bush Light, in the name of Obama, who's funded by these same people, is nothing but a holding action to buy a little time while they administer the same rotten system, brothers and sisters. Crisis of a system is the opportunity for the many. Build that movement, brothers and sisters, of working people for transformation of a society in terminal decay under capitalism. That's what this crisis expresses. That's what this series articulates and documents. Arm yourselves with the information. Prepare for the struggles ahead. Together we will do it, brothers and sisters, because we are the many, and these are the corrupt and historically insolvent few. They are insolvent with ideas. They are insolvent with perspective. They are insolvent with the capacity to meet the imminent and immediate demands of human beings. All of us together, brothers and sisters, all species, our culture, our civilization, our future is at stake here. It's in our hands to transform society, to transform life as it ought to, into what it ought to be as opposed to what it is today. The series is at that issue. About the future for all of us. Please, support the work, support the station, support the future of this broadcasting.
And do something good for yourself. Get on the phone, 212-209-2950. Michael, let's go to the fourth part, the depth of the assault on working people. Michael's queuing up for the little excerpt from The Depth of the Assault on Working People, very important, where we discuss the estimates of now it's up to 2.5 million foreclosures coming up this year. The incredible depth of the assault, as I mentioned with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger imagining saying he's going to reduce people who receive the minimum wage in California of $8 and to reduce it down to $6.55. Incredible. And this is a dollar. Michael, you said you found the spot?
I've got it.
Great. Let's go with it. 212-209-2950. Keep those phones ringing.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, Part 4, The Depth of the Assault on Working People. Already, 1 million homes across the country have been seized by banks and other financial institutions providing mortgages. But that is only the tip of the iceberg. Repossessions rose 90% last month, according to RealtyTrack, a company that tracks foreclosure statistics. 8,000 families a day are sliding into foreclosure. 233,000 properties are in some stage of default. This would mean almost 3 million more homes lost in the coming year. According to analysts at Citigroup, about $460 billion worth of adjustable mortgages are scheduled to reset this year. The interest each month of the mortgage will rise drastically. This raises the minimum payments for borrowers. What is the significance for people across the United States? What really is happening? Today on Taking Aim, we will discuss the depth of the assault on working people. Ralph?
Maya, January is the sixth straight month with over 200,000 foreclosure filings, according to RealtyTrack. The fourth quarter total of 642,150 filings was the most since records were recorded. More than 1% of U.S. households are in stages of foreclosure. That's just in 2007, and this is escalating on a very rapid scale. So this crisis is not merely uncontained by the bailout of Bear Stearns, so-called, but it is, in fact, escalating by every standard, and the impact on working people is only beginning to be measured in its true magnitude.
Let's look at the statistics. Bloomberg.com, that gives financial reporting, discusses how the crisis is continuing. In an article by Sharon Lynch, U.S. home foreclosures jump 90% as mortgages reset, statistics that I mentioned in our introduction. State housing agencies, however, are turning away many applicants, that is, applications for assistance with their mortgages. Their homes have lost too much value, or the people have accumulated too much debt. This is significant because home prices in 20 U.S. metropolitan areas fell in December by the most on record, the most since statistics have been kept. The measure dropped 9.1% from a year earlier. Nationwide, home prices fell 8.9% in the fourth quarter from a year earlier, the biggest decline in 20 years. According to some financial analysts, with the collapse of housing values, many homeowners realize there's no chance that they will ever be a true owner of their home. No matter how much they pay with rising interest each month, they're never going to attack the principal, and consequently, they are just handing the keys back to the bank. California and Florida recorded the highest foreclosure rates among the 50 states. California in itself represents 13% of the gross national product of the United States. It's a very significant part of the U.S. economy. So when California and Florida record the highest foreclosure rates, the country is sliding into a very deep recession. Some call it an epic recession. What are the numbers in California? 57,158 properties facing possible seizure just in the beginning of this year. But it isn't limited to California. Florida had the second highest number of homes in default or foreclosure. 30,178 families facing assault and dispossession in January alone. This is double the figure from last year. Arizona, Colorado, Massachusetts, Georgia, Connecticut, Ohio, and Michigan round out the top 10 states in missed payments. Ralph?
Well, Maya, if you measure this in terms of locales, New York is one of the real signals of what's going on. Here's a piece in the New York Times on March 24th. With the economy tied to Wall Street, New York braces for job cuts, Louise Story's article, which makes a very important point. Namely, as she puts it, the New York economy is more dependent than ever on high Wall Street incomes, which had jumped by more than half since 2001. Now the city braces for a huge contraction in the financial sector as a result of the credit crisis and the collapse of Bear Stearns, and the fallout will be far worse than in the past. The finance industry was responsible for a third of all wages in New York City. And this is the highest ratio in recorded times. Each Wall Street job supports three workers in other sectors of the New York economy. So the consequence of this is that as the credit crisis unfolded and firms discovered the depth of their losses, layoffs are going to escalate on a scale that has been unprecedented, and the impact across New York will be absolutely catastrophic, as the article sets it out.
And Ralph, what you mean by credit crisis is the speculative crisis, as the financial institutions, particularly the investment banks, are having to borrow money to cover the margins on their speculative investments, their hedge funds, and buying derivative instruments. Other banks don't want to lend them money. That created a credit crunch. And also there's the credit crunch of the foreclosed homes. So this is what you mean, the speculative crisis that is taking place and unfolding in the United States.
Well, the basic point that's being made here, as she puts it in her article, Bear was a profound shock to the market. No one could have fathomed that something like this would happen so fast. Employees across the board in New York are nervous. Anxiety is felt among all the businesses that cater to Wall Street, the president of the food delivery systems. All of the financial markets are tied to, because of the extent to which the fictive economy is dominant in American capitalisms, the job losses that flow from the collapse of the financial sector will be on a scale with the crisis for these banking and financial conglomerates themselves.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. This is the last moments for you to call 212-209-2950. Make your contribution to WBAI for the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital, four-part series. Show your support for Taking Aim. We know how much you look forward to hearing Taking Aim each week. You tell us, you write to us, you call us, you let us know. Now's the time to let WBAI know that you want to keep Taking Aim on the air. You want to keep WBAI coming to you 24/7. The collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital, our gift to you. Part one, the overall, the collapse of Bear Stearns. Part two, the specter of systemic collapse. Part 3, regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making. Part 4, the depth of the assault on working people. It'll give you a wonderful understanding of what is happening now with the new assault of executive power against congressional representation, the powers of Congress to regulate the financial markets. Ralph?
Well, of course, Congress is the Millionaires Club, and funded by Wall Street, funded by the financial houses, which are the largest contributor to Barack Obama, for example. But we were citing, brothers and sisters, in this series, data that we've been accumulating for some time. Here's the Financial Ninja on December 4th, 2007, a rather eloquent headline. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac close the gap in Florida screwed. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have closed the gap, the mess that Greenspan made. Florida's pension fund holds the same suspect debt as the frozen pool. Florida's pension fund owns more than $1 billion of the same degraded and downgraded and defaulted debt, resparking a run on state investment pool for local governments and forcing officials to freeze withdrawals. What that means is the State Board of Administration, manager of $37 billion in short-term assets in Florida, including the pool, and overseeing $138 billion of the Florida retirement system, all that is down the tubes. Hundreds of school districts and towns are unable to access billions of dollars frozen. Local government investment pool, the workers' pensions and retirement funds relying on the board's management, they are vulnerable to the same losses. It's a crisis in which, who takes the fall? Working people. As unions become part of the capitalist system and put their money in the hands of the bankers, their pension funds, their collected dues, what happens to them? The system screws them, as the headline says. And we document this. We set it out, brothers and sisters. We make it explicit, even as the bourgeois press is doing at this very moment. U.S. Congress approves government bailout of the mortgage giants. 2 weeks after the Bush administration called on Congress to approve an unprecedented plan to authorize the use of unlimited public funds to bail out the mortgage finance giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the Senate joined the House in passing the legislation and sending to the White House for President Bush's approval. What was the engine behind this? The Democratic Party in Congress, 227 Democrats in favor, brothers and sisters. It's the U.S. bailout of the mortgage giants, the politics of plutocracy, and it puts everybody on the line for impoverishment, the loss of our future, the loss of our health care, the loss of our pensions, the loss of our retirement, brothers and sisters. The system is targeting us. Its crisis is our crisis. The series documents this. Get ready, brothers and sisters. The struggle is unfolding. Get ready for it. It's coming.
That's why we call our program Taking Aim. We are very serious about it. We are taking aim. 212-209-2950. Please get on the phone. You have no time to lose. We're off the air to make way for the WBAI news coming to you every day. Remember, WBAI 24/7 from early in the morning to late at night and through the night and back into the early morning. You have your choice of quality programming. It can only come with your support. Listener-sponsored radio, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, a four-part series. We've devoted hours to editing it so that it is tightly knit, full of important information, cogent analysis, four-part series, $100 contribution to WBAI, 212-209-2950. Get on the phone right away.
Maya, we can't influence these people who have power in our society. We can't persuade them. We can't contain them. We cannot change them. We have to overthrow them, brothers and sisters. That's what this information is designed to facilitate, arming us for struggles ahead, politically, intellectually, organizationally. The series is part of a perspective for galvanizing our many into a fighting instrument for change, the only instrument capable of salvaging the remains of a society going down the tubes, brothers and sisters. Please support Taking Aim, Free Speech Radio, the evidence that is in your hands to prepare us for the necessary struggles where all of us, the many, involved in this process. It is not a spectator sport. Every one of us is engaged in it together. That's where we're coming from. We know you are, too.
Remember, 212-209-2950. You can also make a contribution on the WBAI website, www.wbai.org. Either place, make your contribution at this moment, 212-209-2950, and give us a buzz at takingaim@pacbell.net. We want to hear from you.
Right.
We're going to turn over to Michael G. Haskins, our wonderful engineer who's going to introduce the WBAI News.
Well, that is correct. Thank you very much, Ralph and Maya. The phones are ringing now. There are four calls on the line now. Join those callers for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. And we want to thank, Chris.